Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, one of our all-time favorite guests is back, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Of course, the greatest bodybuilder of all time, one of the most popular actors of all time, and the governor of the largest state in the country. We headed to Gold's Gym, which is one of the places where Arnold Schwarzenegger first got his start in America. He's been working out there for 55 years in Venice. He invited me to work out with him, which is crazy. You can see that workout at youtube.com/AlexMichelson. But after that surreal experience of working out with him, we sat down with him in their studio area to talk about his new book, Be Useful, which is already number one on the New York Times bestseller list. It's a lot about motivational concepts and positivity and sort of how he thinks. It's a really good book. I recommend it to folks. We talk about that book. We talk about some of the news of the week, including SAG-AFTRA strike ending, what happened in Israel, Governor Newsom's China trip. And we have some fun, including talking about his pet pig, Schnelly. It's a great conversation. He's really fascinating. It feels like a podcast, and I'm glad that we have this format because for TV, we had to trim a lot of it, and this is a lot of bonus content, and it's really great to listen to him. So here is Mr. Olympia, the Terminator, the Governator, whatever you want to call him, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Governor Schwarzenegger, welcome back to The Issue Is, and congrats on Be Useful, your new book, number one.
Well, thank you. You don't have to call me governor because here we're in Gold's Gym, so everyone calls me here Arnold.
Okay. That feels weird for me to call you Arnold.
I know.
Let's start with Gold's Gym. You're literally up on the wall right over here.
Right.
What does this place symbolize to you?
Well, interestingly enough, you would assume now this symbolizes that he can build the best body in the world. Yeah. But to me, number one, it symbolizes generosity and togetherness. And inclusion, and hate, all of those kind of things. Because when I came over, Joe Weida, that brought me to America, told me, he says, go to Vince's gym over in the valley and go to Gold's Gym. These are the two best gyms in the world, as far as I'm concerned. And so I came to Gold's Gym, and Joe Gold, who built the place, it was now 1968, he said to me, he says, you know, you're a foreigner. You're over there from Germany, from Austria. He says, you don't have to pay. Mm. So then I became the first member that didn't have to pay. And everyone, even his closest friends, freaked out. They said, what? Joe said you don't have to pay. He made me pay. I'm his closest friend.
Right.
So Joe had everyone pay because it's the only way he could support the gym. There was like 100 members then, right? So there was not that much. But so anyway, so then the next thing I knew was that the people from Gold's Gym came to my apartment and started giving me dishes and silverware and pillowcases and blankets and a black and white TV and a radio and all of that stuff. So I just I literally had tears in my eyes. I've never had this kind of a generosity and inclusion that I felt, kind of like they really absorbed me and they really took me with open arms, brought me into the bodybuilding community, into the Gold's Gym community. So this is why I've been loyal for all this 55 years now, and they've been training in Gold's Gym.
So the book is called Be Useful, and it starts with you talking about one of the lower moments in your life after some personal failures in your marriage, and sort of reassessing for you, where do I go from here? How am I most useful? How do you see yourself now at this moment in your life as being most useful?
Well, interestingly enough, it took me into a direction that I never thought I will go, which is to become a motivational speaker and to write motivational books and to do seminars, motivational seminars, all of the stuff that I never thought I ever would do, because it just kind of evolved from bodybuilding to then getting into show business and then eventually becoming governor and doing always public service stuff, if it's Special Olympics or after school programs or the President's Council on Physical Fitness or environmental issues and all that stuff. But so this is a kind of a new area. And so I felt kind of like, well, people are really responding. Mm-hmm. They think that I really can motivate them. And if that's a talent that I have that they maybe did not know previously, I'm more than happy to go down that route and to go and motivate people, because to me it's important that not only I feel positive and that I feel happy,
yeah.
and that I feel successful. I want everyone to feel successful, everyone to feel happy, and to be included, and to be loved, and all that stuff. So this book kind of was written in mind that I want to teach people, how did I do it? What did I learn during my long career? And what are the tools that I found are very, very important to become successful, to become happier?
And obviously you talk about the most important tool is to have a vision. And then you also talk about this idea of being curious and being a sponge and asking good questions. And that one of the keys to interesting, successful people, they'll help you if you ask them good questions. So as I'm now in this process of sitting with a interesting, smart person, what would you describe as a good question? What are the best kinds of questions somebody can ask you?
Well, you know, questions are always kind of good when you learn from them.
Yeah.
So I think that any question that you have, and may I remind you, and this is not kind of like, you know, making you feel good because of your audience or so, but you're one of the best, if not the best, interviewer.
Mm.
And I tell you why, because I always walk away and I said, you know, he really asked profound and good questions. Not questions that just kind of like that everyone else asks, but interesting questions that really furthers the agenda, that really teaches people. And I think that's what you have. But it is only can come if you're curious.
Right.
And that's what I'm talking about in the book. Open your mind and shut your mouth, right? Or shut your mouth and open your mind.
Yeah.
You can do either way. But the bottom line is that is what it's all about, because I learned much more when I shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, I just listened. And that I talk about that when
right.
I became governor. I mean, there were issues after issues after issues that I did not know, because I have never really run for public office. You know, I did not know the details about, you know, why did the teachers union fight for certain things? Why? What is it that the nurses union do? What are the nurses talking about when they talk about a 4-to-1 ratio versus a 6-to-1 ratio? And often it all had to be explained to me by them, actually. They
right.
came to my office and they educated me. So the Capitol
right.
In Sacramento became kind of a university. I learned things in the 7 years there that you could have never learned in any university.
I appreciate the compliment, but you also talk about schma. This idea of sometimes you got to give a little BS every once in a while, in a nice way, right? To help things. How does that work in terms of, you talk about sell, 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 and oftentimes BS helps the sale a little bit.
Well, it's not BS in the same sense as like bullshit, but
right.
it is kind of like, how do we spice it up?
Right.
You know, like for instance, if I go and Monday was a perfect example, you know, when I got the award from the
Holocaust Museum, Los Angeles, honoring you for your work
exactly,
against anti-Semitism.
Getting this award, it's award for courage,
right?
Because I speak out. Well, I can go and talk about speaking out and about not being prejudiced and to be inclusive and not to be into hate and all that stuff all I want.
Right.
But now, if you add a little schmear to the whole thing, which
schmear,
means like
sorry.
A story.
Okay.
How do I make not this kind of subject brew a little bit and create life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that people are listening rather than a lecture, but a story.
Mm.
So I told the story about how when I brought home a magazine to my parents and my father looked at it and they said, this is from a Jew, Ben Weider. Ben Gurion was the president of Israel. I mean, this is Ben. This is a Jewish magazine. Where did you get this magazine? So I told the story that I detected at the age of 15 how my father was still prejudiced.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was that the very same person that he was attacking, this Ben Weider and Joe Weider, two Jews, are the ones that brought me to America.
Right.
It made my dream become a reality. So I told that story to the audience, and all of a sudden the audience got it of where I got my kind of a change within the next, you know, kind of generation. My father was in the Nazi war, so that he's honored the next generation, and he's totally the opposite of all of that. So this is what we talk about. You have to kind of colorize the whole thing
sure.
and dramatize the whole thing and kind of, because as I say, communicate, 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 sell, sell, sell. This is one of the arts in order to really move forward in life.
So when you said that to your dad, who was a Nazi officer, that Jews were responsible for bringing you to America and responsible for your success. How did he react? Do you think he started to change?
Well, you know, so this was one of those things. I was not in America, and he couldn't do anything about it other than just maybe learn.
Yeah.
So I told him, I said, well, this is not the only Jew. And he says, what do you mean? I said, well, Reg Park, my idol, his mother was Jewish, mm-hmm. and therefore he is Jewish. I said, when I got into the movies here, my first movie I did was Bob Rafelson is a Jew. Mike Medavoy, who got me the part in Stay Hungry, is a Jew. I said, the guy that had received me in Gold's Gym, he is a Jew. I said, so all of these guys that are helping me in America realize my dreams are mm-hmm. Jewish. Mm-hmm. I said, so you should never, ever talk about Jews that way. Right. You got to get off that. And he never, ever talked about it badly again after that. And so I don't know if that changed him as a person or anything like that, because he was misled, of course. But I mean, the bottom line was, I got it off my chest,
right,
what the reality of it is.
One of the things you talk about in this book is this concept of letting people underestimate you, mm-hmm. Which is something you did with the governor's debate when you mm-hmm. were running in the recall and a lot of people underestimated you.
Right.
Can you talk about that strategy, what you did and what people can learn from that?
Well, you know, again, there was no one that taught me that strategy of letting go of the idea that you kind of like hate when someone underestimates you. I always kind of like hated that. And then when I did the Tonight Show and some other, you know, evening entertainment shows, they would ask me a question and they would say, Arnold, tell me now, when did you start working out? And I said, well, I actually started with 15, but first I was doing shot put and I was doing javelin and this and that. And then I was doing some weightlifting and there was this guy that had got me to, and the guy said, whoa, 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 hold it. That, can you believe, ladies and gentlemen, give him a big, big hand. And now they all were applauding because they flashed his lights on, the applause, right?
Right.
And they're all applauding. And I'm looking around and say, what happened? And then he says, this guy is a bodybuilder, he's a big guy, but he can talk. So just because I said a normal sentence,
right,
he thought that was spectacular.
Right.
So I said to myself after the show was over, I said, I think I learned something. I think this is actually good. When they underestimate you, then anything you do, they think is great. So I established myself as the smart bodybuilder, mm-hmm. the guy that was really wise with money, that was good with investments and all that stuff. But I was not any more than anyone else. I just invested really well. I bought apartment buildings and stuff, and I talked about that. And they thought, oh, this bodybuilder is really smart. So I said to myself, I actually benefit from people kind of underestimating me. And so the same was with everything in the movie business. So when I went on stage and in the studios and I started acting, they always thought that I would just come in. It would be really hard to explain to me how to do the scene and how to communicate and how to articulate the various different emotions and all this. And then when I did it, a half-decent job, they said, that was fantastic. And they were applauding me in the studio, which they normally never do. It was seen after the next. So I realized, this is great. Yeah. I let them underestimate me.
Uh-huh.
And so it benefited me in acting. It benefited me when I was on the road and I was kind of doing publicity for movies, and especially when I ran for governor.
Yeah, and you went into the debate. People thought, once again, you wouldn't know what you were talking about.
And I knew the subjects, I knew the issues, and I also had some good jokes,
yeah.
You know, and the other ones didn't, you know, because I always feel that everything that you do in life has to have a part of humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter if you're deadly sick, you got to go and have some humor. Have people joke around you to lighten things up. And including in a gubernatorial debate or presidential debate, because when I went in there and sat down for that debate, there was absolute silence in the room. When you go back to the videos, check it out, there was absolute silence. You could hear a needle drop because everyone was kind of like, oh, this is the debate for the governorship. Oh, this is really serious.
Mm-hmm.
Bogus, right? What is serious? So I mean, it's like, so it's kind of just, you know, He's going to run the state, but not alone. It's like there's all this other mechanism right. there. But anyway, I felt kind of like, okay, let me try a joke here.
Right.
And so I made a joke. I think it was about Arianna Huffington. I said, you know, your tax loopholes are so big that I can fit my Hummer through it. And everyone started howling in the theater, in that room, in that hall.
Right.
So I realized that's what they need.
Yeah.
They don't need this serious kind of policy stuff. They can care less. They want jokes. They want me to attack each one of the candidates. Right. That's what I started doing. And all of a sudden, the whole thing lit up. And the next day, the poll numbers came out. Schwarzenegger won the debates by 60% and blah, yeah. blah, blah.
And your poll numbers went up like 25%.
And they went past, you know,
which is crazy.
All the other candidates.
And it's crazy that it's been 20 years since then now.
20 years now we are celebrating our 20th anniversary.
And one of the jokes you write in the book is about you tried to take a dialect class to remove your accent, mm-hmm. but that never really took. I mean, do you have a sort of like American Valley Boy accent? Can you do that or no?
No, no, no. But, I mean, look, I'm having a tough time just to be totally understandable. But the accent removal coach, Easton was his name, Robert Easton. He was historic. I mean, he taught all of the most famous actors how to get an accent, not how to remove one. He has never ever had to work on anyone to remove one.
Yeah.
But he helped me tremendously because I remember sitting there, the difficulty that I had by just saying three, because we don't have the TH, three, right? So we have only, we the Germans always say three with an S, three. So he says, no, Arnold, 3,333 1/3 say that. And I will be stumbling all over the place with this whole thing. But I started practicing it, and I started really learning the TH sound.
Yeah.
And so it became much more natural. So things like that he helped me with so that people understand, because the idea was not to get rid of the accent necessarily, but to be totally understandable. Because that's the power of when you're a leading man. People have to understand what you're saying.
One of the things you talk a lot about in the book is this concept of positivity and how there are actual medical benefits to being positive. But so much of our society and so much of our media is driven by negativity because there's a negativity bias. How do you, in your own world, fight back against all the negativity that we see?
Well, first, I think the most important thing is that we realize that the human brain functions a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And that you cannot go and wipe that out. You can fight against it and you can help it, but you cannot wipe it out. So don't get mad about it. Like, we know forever, bad news sells better.
Mm-hmm.
So the media automatically will show you much more kind of like a car accident where four people got killed, rather than the car accident where four people were saved. So I mean, it's just, that's just the way it is. And so the media will always report, because the media has to have people tune in. So it's not that the media is negative and that they are always feeding us negative stuff. It's just they know that the people love to watch negative stuff,
right? And if
so this is why this is this thing that you have to understand, that people are more attracted to the negative than to the positive. And so therefore, we have to make an effort to kind of confront that and kind of work against that. And so when you see, for instance, on social media, everyone attacking each other and being really negative, then I came out with my newsletter and with my kind of thing, which now everyone calls the positive corner.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, oh, if you want to have something positive, okay, we just read the negative news. Let's switch over to something positive and let's look what Schnitzel has to say.
Yeah.
You know? And so then they read my newsletter and they read the positive thing. And so my book is about that, because I always felt, I understand the negativity out there, and I will always be positive because I'm just a positive person. And the reason is also because I have so much to celebrate.
Right.
I mean, you know, coming to America and being a bodybuilding champion for years and years and years, getting into the movie business and becoming the highest paid entertainer and actor and then becoming governor and meeting all these interesting people, from presidents from all over the world, and the Pope and the this and the that, and actors. And I mean, it's like absolute heaven. So, I mean, I just love the world and I love what has happened in my career. But I always was a person that wanted to share everything. So if I go to a place skiing and there's a fantastic ski mountain, then I want to tell you, I said, hey, let's go together. Right. You got to go and ski there. And the same is with this. I want to go and just share my experience with people and what I've learned, the tools, how they can be successful. Because the happiest guy I am really when I see other people being happy around me, and how if I can help them becoming happy. And here are the tools, you know, they have a great vision, set big goals, don't listen to the naysayers,
right,
you know, and work your ass off. Don't look for shortcuts or anything like this. And remember, you're not a self-made man or a self-made person. There's people that helped you, so therefore you have the responsibility to go out and help other people. And so that's what will make you happy and successful.
And you write about the fact that you're more interested at this stage in your life in the we than just the me.
That's right. Changed yeah, well, you know, when you were... get to a stage in your life where I felt kind of like, I remember with Special Olympics, it was all of a sudden I started realizing how wonderful it feels to help people that need help, and to have an effect, and to all of a sudden just say, we were all golfing. We had this golf band that's benefit from Special Olympics, and I had my Special Olympian golfer with me, and we were golfing together, and we were scoring this, and now we're raising this money for Special Olympics. It was all about we. And so it's a nice thing. It's also, when you think about it, for your whole life, you think about my career, my muscles, my bodybuilding titles and all this, and all of a sudden, you are the governor of a state that has 40 million people. Mm-hmm. You're serving, and I was the kind of servant that believed in being a public servant and not a party servant, even though I was a Republican, but I felt like I have to serve all 40 million people, and I have to do the best job possible representing everybody. Now, was I successful all the time? No, absolutely not, but I was trying to at my best.
You know, at 76 years old, you are having a moment right now. Your show, FUBAR, was number one on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Your documentary about you was number one on Netflix. Your book, Be Useful, debuts at number one on the New York Times bestseller list. And in both the book and the documentary, you're really vulnerable and honest. And talk about your failures in addition to your successes. Can you talk about your decision to be so vulnerable, and is that somewhat freeing at this stage in your life?
You know, I don't look at myself as making myself vulnerable. I think that I have learned over the years that it's always good to be able to express yourself and to say, you know, whatever is on your mind, and to be honest, because I think that we can learn much more for ourselves, and other people can learn from you if you're honest. You know, if you fail in something, it's much better for me to say, I failed in this. Because if I recognize, it's like in German we have a saying, you know, Selbstbekenntnis ist der beste Weg zur Besserung. Meaning, if you realize that you're falling short in something, if you realize that you're bad in something or that you failed in something, the best way to do is to recognize that. That's when you can really improve. Mm-hmm. Because if you ignore it, and if you say, well, no, that was not me. It was caused because of this and that. And if you find excuses for your failures, then you would never learn and you would never grow. And to me, it's all about growing. Because remember, I see the mind and the way our brain works the same as our muscles. Mm-hmm. Now, you and I, we worked out together. Mm-hmm. So we know that the more we pull on that bar, the more resistance we give our muscles, the better it can grow, because the more it will respond. But the head is the same way. Your character is the same way. The more you give the character, your head and your brain resistance, and the more you make it struggle, and the more you make it suffer, and the more you experience defeat and all of those kind of things, and recognize it, and then try to repair it again, the stronger it will get.
Are you feeling the love at this moment? Being number one at so many things, how are you processing that?
You know, I always felt a lot of love from the people.
Yeah.
I, you know, I have never felt hatred or anything like that. I think it's because I'm very inclusive. I try not to offend people when they think differently than I do. And it's nice, you know, I'm 76 years old, and, you know, I come here to the gym, and people are asking me questions. How do you train like this? How do you do this? Oh, I saw you on this talk show. This is really fantastic. You know, and they get off on all of this stuff. And so this is great. I think that to me the important thing is that my kids really kind of like compliment me all the time.
Mm.
And that makes me feel good. When they come over to the house, they would just thank me for the way I brought them up, even though it was kind of discipline. You know, or when we go skiing, they would say, thank you for making us ski and not go for hot chocolate when we were crying about getting hot chocolate. You made us ski another 5 times down there before we had the hot chocolate and all that stuff. And they come over and how much fun they always had with me and all this stuff and how well I do and they're proud of me. And it's, that's really, so to me, the family is the most important thing. But look, I'm having a great time. But when I look back at my life, I just have to say my wisest decision was to come to America.
Mm-hmm.
Because I tell you, none of it, absolutely none of it would have happened if I wouldn't have come to America. I have every success I had was because of America. It has shown to me firsthand that I can say with absolute conviction that this is still the land of opportunity where anyone can make it.
Greatest country in the world.
Yes.
We were talking to Arnold Schwarzenegger, the author of Be Useful. Governor, while we have you, a couple quick just news of the week questions. SAG-AFTRA strike is over. Hollywood will be coming back to work. Your reaction to that?
I think probably like every actor and like everyone in show business and everyone in Los Angeles that has a business, including the mayor that runs the city, is as happy as I am today. Because, you know, strikes is not damaging only for the people that work in that specific industry, but it cripples the whole economy. And the amount of restaurants that had trouble existing during that time, breakfast places and catering places and all that stuff, businesses and so on. So I think it hurt a lot of people. But it is a necessary step to get and to make improvements in your benefits. So I think that now actors get better benefits and there's more thoughtfulness about AI and all of those kind of things. So I think it's good that it's over. Now everyone can go back to work. The writer's strike is over, everything is over, and now we can go back to work. And I'm looking forward to this coming year.
Isn't it crazy that your career started fighting back against machines and now literally there's a negotiation about fighting back against machines with the AI how a lot of that is sort of coming true.
Yes, but I mean, what is amazing about it was that in 1984, when the movie, when we did the movie, 83, 84, at that point, it just looked at it as kind of a horror movie, Terminator, and as an action movie, as a B-movie.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the actual intelligence of the writing of that script, sure. Jim Cameron did such an unbelievable job that it actually was the most sophisticatedly written movie of that year and for a long time to come.
Sure.
Because everything that he predicted in this film is becoming a reality. But we're now kind of in fear of this self-awareness of the machines. And so this is what the Terminator was all about, and there was a Terminator 2. So I think it's fantastic.
So now that Hollywood is coming back, are there any, we know FUBAR is coming back, right?
Well,
are there any new projects for you?
No, but Netflix was so excited about the success of FUBAR. And I, of course, was very excited because it was loosely based on, you know, True Lies.
Right.
So it was so successful, and the people just loved the combination of the action and the combination of the humor that was in it and the acting of all the various different actors and actresses and stuff like that. So it was really fantastic. So I'm delighted that we have a second season, and I'm already kind of like mentally preparing for that. We're going to start shooting in the spring through summer, And so I'm really looking forward to that.
Another big thing in the news is what's happening with Israel and Hamas. Obviously, you've spoken out so much about anti-Semitism in the last few years, and we've talked with you a lot about that. Sort of how do you think about that conflict right now? And I know you're also very concerned about innocent Palestinians.
Well, as I have said in the past, that there was a sad, unprovoked attack on the Israelis. And, barbaric attack. I mean, when you see the footage, it's just awful to be in a situation like that. And so, to me, then there's the response of the Israelis, which they have to respond to. This is clear, this is their responsibility. But then you say to yourself, okay, this is not new. This has been around for decades, if not thousands of years. You can go that far back. And so this is because politicians have not really come to a peace agreement. Mm. And that's their responsibility. Mm. And they have failed, and because of their failure, soldiers have to die, innocent people have to die on both sides. And it's just what is happening now, the outcome of all of that unprovoked attack and savage attack now is like everyone has to suffer. Everyone is. And to me, I feel like the Israelis have a right to exist. They've been given this land. And so for anyone to go and say, you know, they should all be dead and we should drive them in the ocean and all this crazy talk is ludicrous.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have to say that the Palestinians also have a right to exist. Mm-hmm. And they should have a land. And so they have to figure out, someone out there has to figure out, or a team of people, how do they bring them together? Mm-hmm. And how do they go and come to a peace agreement and to some kind of a solution to all this so that people can live in harmony? Because I don't know if you have been there, traveling those whole areas
Sure. In
the Middle East. I have been there many times. Mm-hmm. And it makes me mad when you see those conflicts.
Sure.
Because those are unbelievable, beautiful places. I mean, have you ever been to Beirut and to the Lebanon, the sitting there in those outdoor cafes? Mm-hmm. I mean, what a beautiful vacation spot this could be. Israel, what a spectacular vacation spot, a historic vacation spot. And all of this land over there, Jordan, and all of this, Egypt, all of those places there. Why not make this the greatest vacation area in the world? Why always have wars?
Yeah.
It's just so sad.
I was just in China with Governor Newsom. You were the first California governor to go to China representing the state. I'm curious your thoughts about him going there and the state of the U.S.-China relations right now.
I think that we are so close to China, you know, so that even though far away traveling-wise, but when we're much closer than the East Coast is.
Yeah.
So it's natural for us to do trade missions, Asian trade missions. So what I did was I went to China.
Number one trading partner.
Exactly, yeah, absolutely. So I went to China, I went to South Korea, and I went to Japan. So we wanted to cover all of those areas. And so it's smart for the governor to do that. You know, it's smart to go there to rekindle, especially since what's going on a national level, that there's all this standoff and this kind of confrontations and all this madness and about Taiwan and all this stuff. So I think it was smart to do that and to just go over there and to just rekindle and to just say, look, whatever happens at a national level, we are looking forward to being your continuous partner and doing business for us to sell our agriculture to China, for us to sell our wines to China, our entertainment to China, our cars. You know, we're producing the Tesla cars here and all of this. So, I mean, yes, and other batteries that we're developing, the solar panels that we're developing, that we are the best in just about every industry.
Sure.
In the high technology, of course. So I think it's smart to have these relationships, yes.
We were talking with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, the author of Be Useful. When you were on The Issue Is Last, we had major breaking news, which was that you had a pig at your house, Schnelli. It was the first time you talked about that.
Well, I'm glad you call this major breaking news.
Yeah, I mean, it was really all over the world. People were writing about this pig,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
So any more animals? Any new animals?
Not right now, but it is kind of like having a new animal because this pig now has gone from a 17-pound pig to a 50-plus pound pig. I mean, it's now getting heavier and heavier when I pick it up and I put it on my lap. I mean, it's getting heavy. We have to figure out a way of how to move it around, to kind of put it in the car and stuff like that. But I mean, it has been a lot of fun. Schnelli, he is a real interesting character. He's very talkative. He's like, oink, 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 oink. He always comes into the kitchen, kind of like, and the way he walks with his ass going back and forth like this, he's just walking very bossy. You know, and then he tries to eat the dog's food and everyone's food and everything like this. Yesterday I had a plate on my lap and he just came around, he looked at me like this, sniffed a little bit, and then all of a sudden jumped on my lap like a dog.
Right.
He normally doesn't do that.
Okay.
Pigs don't do that. He jumped up with his front paws and grabbed the sandwich and took off. But so fast. You know, as you say this, if this overweight pig, this fat pig, I mean, could never move that fast. But that's why we call him Schnelli.
Because he moves.
Schnell means fast.
Right.
So Schnelli is a cute way of saying he's the fastest.
So your fantastic girlfriend, whose birthday it is, today,
yeah.
Right? So happy birthday to Heather.
Thank you very much.
And
thank
we
you.
Love Heather. Yes, and she's
you.
Responsible for this whole thing. So we got three dogs, right? A miniature horse, a donkey, and the pig.
Well, she grew up with animals in Colorado and Loveland. And this was the area called where she grew up. And she grew up with horses and with dogs and with everything. So she is very much into animals. So she has been really a big supporter of all my dogs. She got me the Malamute, the big monster dog that weighs 155 some pounds.
Wow.
And she also got me a Schnitzel, which is, you know, the brown dog, also really big, 135 pounds or so. And then she got me Lulu, because she always felt that the whiskey needs a companion, which was absolutely true. And they're so in love with each other, always hanging out together. So all of this is
the
really
donkey and the horse.
When you have a partner that is so supportive about all of this stuff and that thinks the same way, she's a true kind of soulmate. You know, we really love all of our animals. And so she has been really terrific. And she's helping so many people with the therapy, physical therapy, with her institute, with, you know, she's doing such a great job with that.
Yeah, world-class institute for physical therapy. So do all the animals all get along? Everybody's good?
Oh, yeah, everyone is getting along, yeah, absolutely.
And how are your kids?
Kids are fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really fantastic. And, you know, Catherine comes over with her children, my grandchildren, every week. And they spend time with Lulu and with Whiskey and ride around with them a little bit and playing with the pig and playing with the little dog, which I call Noodle. Her name is Ruth Cherry.
Yeah.
And so she just likes holding her and all that. So the kids just, my grandchildren love the animals. So this is a really great thing when they come over and get entertained by them.
And Cherry is what? It's a little one.
Yeah.
A Yorkie or a Shih Tzu?
A Yorkie.
A Yorkie. And everybody else is like this. Does Cherry run the house?
She's the toughest.
Yeah.
She's the toughest. She immediately growls, shows the teeth, and bites.
Right.
You know, so there's, I mean, all of the animals are afraid of Cherry.
It's usually that way, right?
Yeah, exactly.
A little Napoleon complex for Cherry. So as we wrap up this conversation with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think one of the most moving chapters is when you, it'd be useful, is you write about Sarge Shriver, your father-in-law, and his service and what he taught you about breaking the glass of the mirror. Can you talk about what Sarge Shriver taught you about serving others?
Well, you know, when I was exposed to him and to Eunice, his wife, they always talked about, you know, how to help other people that are sometimes helpless or that need help, if it's Special Olympics or it's poor people or whatever it is. And there was so much dialogue always about service. And, you know, he started the Peace Corps, the Job Corps and Legal Aid to the Poor and all this. He had a really great vision. And so they always talked about, you know, serving people and helping people. So I think that I was a lot exposed to that. But then the one day he gave a speech at the Yale University where he said to the students at the commencement speech, I says, you know, break this mirror that makes you always look at yourself. And you will be able to look beyond this mirror and you will see the millions of people that need your help. Mm. And to me, when I heard that, I said, what a great line.
Yeah.
I mean, how well to describe what happens, you know, the mirror that makes you always look at yourself. Don't always just think about yourself. Think about the people that need your help. And that's why I wrote in a book, I think that the most important thing is that we recognize that we are not self-made people. We're not, there's no such thing as a self-made man. I say I got help from endless amount of people, including the 5.8 million people that voted for me to become governor of California. So how can I say I'm self-made? They made me governor. So it's just as soon as you kind of become aware of that, that you are the product of a lot of help, it makes you think that now I have to go out and help other people too. I have to go and do the same thing. I have to help people. So that is a very, very important lesson.
And when you think of so much of your career was literally looking at a mirror, right? And then that concept of breaking the mirror is driving you.
It was a fantastic kind of simple. And so I've used it a lot. And I just think that it's such a great way of communicating that to young people.
And speaking of looking at a mirror, we did do a workout together. And you are a world-class personal trainer. What'd you think of my form? What can I do better? What constructive criticism do you have?
Well, I know why you're asking me that question.
Why am I asking you that question?
You're asking me this question because you know that you have done really well out there.
Not necessarily.
Oh, you know it. No. I saw in your eyes how great you did. The way you poured things down. Boom, 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 boom. And then you looked over at me. I saw that little glimpse kind of like, yeah. Governor, look at me, huh? I'm not a beginner. I've been doing this for a while. So now you just want to get a reconfirmation. To confirm that you are fantastic. I mean, look, the key thing with working out is that we do the movements the right way, mm-hmm. that we have the right rhythm, that we have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Like, how many people do we see that do half movements?
Right.
And when you start doing half movements in the gym, then you're going to do half movements in everything in your life, is what concerns me. This is why it's very important to help people in the gym and to say, do this movement fully. Because the only one you're cheating on is yourself. So just let's do everything from the beginning to the end. Let's make full movement all the way down, all the way up. And so it's important to teach this to people, because then in regular life, in their jobs and with their relationships, with the parenting, whatever it is, they would then do full movements, mm-hmm. what they call follow through. Remember in sport, tennis, it's all about follow through. In golf, follow through. In skiing, curving the curve completely and go all the way. And so this is, I think, in everything like this in life.
Well, I love the way that you end the book, which is essentially saying thank you and expressing gratitude to the people that have been your inspirations and your mentors. And I just want to say, no BS on this. Thank you. As you wrote to other people, thank you for the inspiration to have a clear vision, to think bigger. Thank you for the idea of being your own advocate to sell things. And thank you for teaching us about hard work. And about gratitude and service. And you have inspired me, and I know I speak for millions of people around the world that you've inspired as well. So honestly, from the bottom of my heart, thank you, Governor, for what you do and for inspiring us to be useful.
It's my pleasure, and I hope people pick up the book and learn from that, because it will really help you.
Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Really appreciate it. Congrats on the book.
Ow.
Okay. Sorry, too strong after that pump.
What is the matter with you? Yeah. Stop drinking here. Thank you.
Great stuff. Thank you so much. That was really excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. I love that.
Thanks so much for listening to this show. Our thanks to the governor and to his team for making this possible. Again, you can go to youtube.com/Alex Michelson to watch the workout, because that's something you really got to see to believe. In the meantime, we'll see you next week back here for more of The Issue Is. Hope you like us, subscribe, give us the reviews, all that good stuff, and have a great week.